now recording. Yeah, that's the only thing I've ever actually heard Craig say before.
He hasn't serenaded you to sleep.
What? Oh yeah. Yeah, he's real good at that.
Yeah.
That was a terrible intro.
This is where you say something, I respond to you, and then you respond back immediately with a witty comment or phrase.
Okay, you said the word witty, yet you're talking about me.
You're very witty.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Hi, I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay, and you are?
I'm very Grumpy Dungeon Master, Christopher. And this is the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. And listen, we're playing our Owl campaign, okay? And I have not been rolling hot in the past couple sessions. In fact, for the last two sessions, I have only rolled two critical hits.
You've lost your mojo. You need to find
I haven't lost my mojo. But what has happened is my wife discovered silvery barbs. And she keeps taking my crits away from me.
Oh,
and I don't
imagine,
like it.
Imagine that.
And I don't like it.
You
it's
know,
making me mad.
That's why I don't allow it at my table. It's the only fucking spell that I've banned. Because it's too good. It's too good.
I keep going, what, critical hit, what, and then all of a sudden she's like, wait a second, as a reaction, and I'm like, don't you dare, I'm going to cast, I was like, don't you dare, and she's like, silvery barbs, so I was like, yeah!
Yep, and oh, it's a first level spell, so I can do it like a million times. It in the bud as soon as it came out and said it's not good at my table, but now you have to suffer through the rest of the campaign with it.
I will always allow the spell. It's not that big of a deal. For all you guys who don't know what Silvery Barbs is, it's a new spell that was introduced in Strixhaven. Quote unquote, one of the worst magic sets ever, oh my god. In the book that's one of the worst books ever in D&D, oh my god. Which, by the way, is like,
I don't know about all that.
If you don't like the source book, if you don't like the source material for the source book, it doesn't mean the book is bad. Okay?
Yep.
Like, I get that people don't like Acquisition Incorporated. I understand that. But you want to know something? If you ever want to run a corporation, that's the book you read to learn how to run a corporation in your game. You want to run a college of any kind of way, shape, or form, or some kind of school? Guess what? Strixhaven's the book for you. It has so much shit in there for how to run a school or a college or a university. Not everyone's going to want to have that. It's not ever going to be in every single game. But by all means, if you want to have some kind of really cool adventure that takes place in a mage college, well, guess what? Strixhaven. Everything else in it may suck. You may hate Owlin for like, Alkin. Oh my god, flying at level 1 is so overpowered. Who cares? You can still say no.
Yep.
And I can say no to Silvery Barbs, which is a new spell introduced in the book, which reads as follows. I know we discussed this in a podcast years ago, but I know we have a lot of new listeners out there.
By years ago, he means a few weeks ago. Also, anyone who thinks Strixhaven is like the worst magic set ever wasn't around when Fallen Empires was a thing.
Yeah, that's true. Alright, so Silvery Barbs, first level spell, it is a reaction spell, instantaneous, range of 60 feet. You magically distract a triggering creature and turn its momentary uncertainty into encouragement for another creature. The triggering creature must re-roll the d20 and use the lower roll. You can then choose a different creature you can see within range. You can choose yourself. The chosen creature has advantage on the next attack roll, ability check, or saving throw it makes within 1 minute. A creature can be empowered by only one use of the spell at a time. So, it's essentially basically, oh, you crit? No, you didn't. And that's pretty much the only time people use it.
Oh, you succeeded on that save? No, you didn't. I mean, if I'm trying to get some, enchantment spell to stick or a transmutation spell to stick, I will absolutely burn a first level slot to double my chances.
Oh, yeah. It's a great spell. It works real well. I'm really proud of my wife playing her bard. I think she found the class that she's really good at, even though she may hate being in that class.
bards in 5th edition don't suck.
Yeah, they're really good. They're not a lot of damage. You can try really hard to make them a lot of damage, but that's not their role. Their role is to basically make it so I can't kill you. And in our session, hopefully you watch it at twitch.tv/grumpydungeonmasters every Saturday at 8. She succeeded in that so damn well. I opened up with like fireball, surprise attack round, murdering everybody, killed the Haragon, try to push some motherfucker off the edge into the lava. And here's my wife with all these reaction spells and like these buff spells. He buffed everybody so like the next wisdom save was at advantage. And it was right when I was about to cast a thing that basically incapacitated everybody via a failed wisdom saving throw. So like, she was on the ball getting all the spells off at time.
What spell grants wisdom bonus to everyone?
I will look up her character real quick.
Yeah, because I remember that as a 3rd edition thing, but I've looked for stuff like that in 5th, and I don't recall any of it. There are a few books I don't have Strixhaven, so maybe it's something out of that. I don't think you allow Acquisitions, Inc. in your
campaign. I do. I don't. Oh, okay. I do. None of the spells in there are really cool or really bad. Insight Greed is a really good spell.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is from there. I actually kind of like Insight Greed.
Yeah.
I do not allow Acquisitions, Inc. stuff in my own game, but I don't have a problem with Insight Greed. Like, it's a good spell.
And I also like Jim's Magic Mist. I like what they did with the spells. They changed them a little bit because, like, D&D has this big world where, like, here's Tasha's, spell. Mm-hmm. Here's Otto's spell. Like, here's Jim's Magic Missile. It adds more damage and makes it so, like, hey, you can blow it up and there goes your face,
Is his name just J-I-M or is it J-I-M-M?
Yeah. No, it's J-I-M.
No, it really should have been double M. then at least it feels like a fantasy name. Like Bob, Bob could be a fantasy name if it's like B-A-W-B or something, but...
Oh, it turns out that the spell that she used actually is in Acquisitions Incorporated.
There you go.
It's called Motivational Speech. It has some flavor text to it. It says, I once heard a motivational speech by Jim, and it was the worst 90 seconds of my life. What does Omen see in him anyways? Said by Walnut Dankgrass.
Wait. Walnut dank grass?
Yeah.
Oh my god. All right. That's brilliant.
It's a 3rd level enhancement spell. And casting time 1 minute. So I don't think she could have probably cast it the way she did, but oh well. Mistakes happen. Who cares?
Yeah.
It says, you address ally, staff, or innocent bystanders to exhort and inspire them to greatness, whether they have anything to get excited about or not. Choose up to 5 creatures within range that can hear you. For the duration, each affected creature gains 5 temporary hit points and has advantage on wisdom saving throws. If an affected creature is hit by an attack, it has advantage on the next attack roll it makes. Once an affected creature loses temporary hit points granted by the spell ends for that creature.
What's the duration on
it? Actually, it's not 5, it's 10 temporary hit points. I guess the spell said 10, but something that she has made it, or the spell says 5, but something she did says 10.
Huh. What was the duration?
1 hour.
Okay, yeah, see... Yeah, that's actually a good spell. They definitely had stuff like that in 3rd edition, because I used that spell pretty regularly to boost somebody's wisdom. There's a lot of encounters that you're going into. We were playing against a lot of mind flayers and stuff, so wanted that wisdom bonus.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like I said, she used it and it helped out quite a bit in that moment, you know. And yeah. So even if the the mistake aside, you know, it's still just like she picked a lot of spells that were like, you know, charm person, charm monster, like a lot of like lockdown spells.
Right.
And that's really where the bard shines, you know. The bard, yeah. It may feel crappy not contributing to the DPS, but if you charm a monster, okay, and it is paralyzed by the charming spell, okay, or do something where basically you can like, I want you to lay down and grovel or something along those lines, and you give that person advantage, you know, that opens up so many more doors to just doing so much more damage.
Well, the truth of the bard class is that it's a utility class. It always has been a utility class, but in the earlier editions that it was in, it was always hampered by not really and truly having its own role. In 5th edition, the utility of it is absolutely capable of being just a straight DPS class if you want to build it that way. Because as you level up, you can learn spells all the different classes. If you want to learn a druid spell, you can learn druid spells. If you want to learn wizard spells, you can. Fireball, lightning bolt, you still have access to all of that stuff. And you can do a ton of damage with that. But at the same time, you can throw fireball and you can throw healing word. So there's not really any other class that can do that. Just pure damage on top of the ability to steal spells from other classes.
Yeah, at least the previous one had Fireball. The 5e doesn't.
Well, they have Lightning Bolt. I know for sure they have Lightning Bolt. It's third. You can learn Lightning Bolt. They did it on Critical Role. First season, Scanlan, he was a bard. He threw Lightning Bolt all the time. And it deals the same amount of damage that Fireball does. It's just
about that.
About what? Do I need to pull out my player's handbook right now? Because I will.
Hold on. I'll look it up here. I have it right here. Lightning Bolt. Basic rules, page 225. Available for the Sorcerer, Wizard, Circle of the Land, Mountain, the Fathomless, and Armorer. Bard is not available for Lightning Bolt.
All right. Here we go.
Oh, you don't believe me? I'm just looking at the source material.
Okay. I'll have to cut this because I'm going to actually have to read. At 6th level, you learn 2 spells of your choice from any class.
Spell 6th level. Okay.
Yeah, it's under College of Lore.
Okay, so when he gets to 6th level, he can learn a 3rd level spell. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was just looking at just whatever spell. Okay, so it's a college, a specific college. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's an archetype. Not all bards could do that, obviously. If you went the College of Valor, there's a couple other ones in some of the expansion ones. You might not be able to get this stuff, but the College of Lore is all about throwing magic.
Okay. Fair enough. See, and that's why I use a builder, because honestly, if it didn't tell me, I wouldn't know.
I just figure out what I want to play, and then I read it and figure out what it can do.
So I figured out what I'm going to play next, and we actually may have a chance to play this on our stream, because once our campaign's done, I'm going to step back from DMing, let one of my players DM, and I get to play for a little bit. And I think I already know what I want to be. I want to be a chromatic dragonborn. Okay. I'm going to go black, I think. May go red, but I'm thinking black, okay? And I'm going to be a Hexblade Warlock. And I've already confirmed that I could change this a little bit, but I'm good. Instead of having a Shadowfell deity that I made a pact with, it's just going to be Tiamat.
All right.
And I'm going to be a Hexblade Warlock, and I'm going to basically use the pact blade feature to create a two-handed greatsword for my character.
Okay.
I'm just going to run around swinging that thing. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to go completely anti-warlock.
Yeah, so you
and never even pick up Eldritch Blast.
Yeah, you're playing Thaladr.
Shut up. He has no shield. Thaladr has a shield.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so you're playing just a random barbarian character who does it through magic instead of through strength.
Yes.
That's a very Christopher way of doing things.
It is.
Yeah. It is getting creative, so there's that.
I mean, one of my favorite classes that I never got to play was actually in 4th edition, and it was in the Scion class.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it lets you create a blade made of light. And then you could throw this blade around at people. You could create force fields. You could like pull people, push people, lift people into the air.
They have a class like that. It's called a Jedi.
You could shoot lightning at them. it was a Jedi.
Could you mind control people?
Yeah, you could mind control people.
Yeah, you want to go home and rethink your life.
Yeah, you could do all that. It was a Jedi. It was just a Jedi. But I wanted to play it so bad, I never got a chance to.
Base magic.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of friends of mine posted. Let me find this thing. Where is it? Come on, Facebook. There it is. So it's the build your own D&D party. I don't know if you've seen these things. So you start with $100, and at $50, you've got Yoda, Gandalf, Doctor Strange, and Thor. So $30 is Geralt, Drist, Conan, and Dumbledore. $20 was Legolas, Blade, and two guys. I have no idea who the hell they are. Maybe I'll have to send this to you.
What are they? Yeah, send it to me.
All right, well, let me save it. And at the $10 mark, you have Jack Sparrow, Indiana Jones, Liu Kang from Mortal Kombat, and Chewbacca. And you had to build your D&D party out of this. I went with a simple three-man party. Yoda, Drist, and Blade for $100 total. Because I get fucking space magic and two unstoppable killing machines.
Yeah, I'm going with... If I'm making a party here, with based on this, and I want to just win, okay?
Yeah.
I'm buying Doctor Strange for 50. I'm buying Dumbledore for 30. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm assigning those two to solve the problems. And then I'm spending the last 20 that I have on Jack Sparrow and Chewbacca, and we're going drinking.
That's a fair combination, actually.
Like, I don't have to do anything when I have the fucking Sorcerer Supreme and Dumbledore, who for all intents and purposes is the best wizard in that franchise, okay?
Yet he still got killed because he was not able to outthink the bad guys.
But it doesn't matter. That's what Doctor Strange is there for, okay?
Yeah.
So you put their two heads together to go basically create whatever wisty magics, okay? At the end, and they'll figure out the problem. If it's really that big of a problem, Doctor Strange will just fuse with whatever horrible demon deity that he needs to go off to fight World War Hulk with.
Yep.
And lose. But anyways, they'll probably both win. Okay. And I'll just get sloshed with, you know, Captain Jack and Chewbacca.
You know, the truth is, you could probably spend $10 and be perfectly fine. All you do is get Captain Jack Sparrow, because his massive ability of luck is going to see you through.
Yeah, but scurvy.
He didn't die. Yeah, but he never got scurvy.
They all have scurvy.
Who the hell are the two guys next to Blade? Do you have any idea? Because I don't recognize them.
I'm guessing that's one of those CW shows with all like the fancy hot kids, you know?
Yeah, like the dude on the left next to Blade, I kind of figured he was probably from Supernatural or something. Because he Yeah, he looks like he's from that show.
I didn't watch Supernatural.
I don't know who
either of those guys are. I'm definitely not buying Geralt. Okay, if I had to put Geralt versus Conan, I'm going for Conan.
I would probably go Geralt over Conan.
You're putting Geralt versus the Terminator.
No, Conan, not the Terminator. Conan.
It doesn't matter because all of Arnold's characters are just the same thing.
Yeah, but while they're using Arnold's picture, I'm thinking more traditional Conan from the novels.
No, that's the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Arnold Conan that they're using there.
Yeah, so but even
the second that Geralt slashes into him, there's just going to be the T-800 under there.
That's not true. That's not true at all. The T-800 is a different movie. It's not the same damn thing. It's not even in the same universe.
See, listen, Skynet sent the androids back so far in time that they crossed dimensions. And so then the Arnold robot showed up and like, oh, I got to kill John Connor. Oh, there's no John Connor. I guess I'll pick up a sword to become Conan then. That's how it happened. It's in the comics.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Sure, man. Sure. If that was the case, then you initially would have probably picked the T-800 over Dumbledore.
Actually, technically, if you really want to get into it, you definitely want to choose Dritz because now he's like an extra planar deity that can warp reality or something.
That's what I said. You pick him because he's an unstoppable killing machine, you know?
Because the writer says so.
And he's $30. He's only $30, man. Yeah, I had to pick Yoda because space magic, and it's not like you can actually kill him. You know,
the problem with the space magic, and this is a very well actually moment for me.
Well, there's
no midichlorians outside the Star Wars galaxy.
Oh, okay.
His powers wouldn't have any effect outside of anything that's not in that universe.
Yeah, Doctor Strange was he was right on par with Yoda. I just wanted to say the words space magic.
Space magic. In reality, all it is just like I can talk to bacteria.
Yep, and they listen.
This midichlorian's name is Steve. This midichlorian's name is Charles. So yeah, we've come far away from silvery barbs.
That's right. We were talking about silvery barbs and why it's the most broken spell of all time.
Yeah. No, but she's doing a great job with that, and I had another very grumpy moment this past week. I'm in the Adventures League, okay? Mm-hmm. And I show up, and 9 fucking people show up for the table.
Yep.
All right. And I'm just like, shit. And I'm in focus mode. I can't like play or like goof around or anything like that. I'm just focused on
running.
There's
now
9 people, and I have to run the game for them. So my brain is pretty much just shot ahead of time. Okay. And not only do we have to run for 9 people, I decided that this would be the great time to start Rime of the Frost Maiden. So pretty much everybody, except for like 1 or 2 people, decided to make brand new characters.
Right.
And so I had to give them the associated things that you give somebody when they start Rime of the Frost Maiden. And I decided to do the same opening as I did for my campaign online, which was start them off by seeing a human sacrifice at the very beginning of the campaign and set the tone right then and there. People are dying. It's cold. Everything sucks. You know?
Yep. Yeah, that's Rime of the Frostmaiden.
That's Rime of the Frostmaiden. And it's really hard to do anything. It's hard to set up a story when it has 9 people. I had to spend the first hour looking at everybody's character sheets and giving them their backstories and helping them flesh that stuff out. So we only got to play for like 2 hours. And then when combat started, I didn't even roll initiative. I was just like, I'm going left or right. Monsters are happening every 3 people. Good luck. Like, that's how it's going to go.
That's a creative way to do that. It's not, you know, it's definitely not rules as written, but when you're in that scenario and you have limited time, just make it work. Yeah.
Exactly. So they went through and they murdered a bunch of crack cats. Had a couple players on one side of the table kind of bogart the encounter, like, oh, they're immune to spells after like all the spells fail, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not their turn to say anything, but, you know, 9 people, you can't really control everybody. And I understand that everybody wants to be doing stuff, but when you have 9 people at the table, everybody needs their moment, you know?
Yep.
So by the time I do, like, let's just say player A's thing, And then I get to like player D, player A wants to do something now in reaction to player D, but I still got E through whatever left to go. You know,
it's not your initiative.
So it's just rough and it's very hard. But we had two new players, and they were great. And the one player decided to play a prank on me. I was talking to them offline about their character, and they mentioned to me like, "Oh, by the way, I'll have dark vision." And I was like, "Oh, great! Wow, amazing! You have dark vision! Woo!" And they're like, "What's that reaction for?" And they kind of like told them about the meme about,
"I have dark vision."
Dark vision, yeah. So she's like, "Oh, that's kind of funny! Ha ha ha!" Well, that player decided basically to have another player interrupt me, okay, and let me know that they had dark vision after like the moment after the tournament. And the second she said, "Oh, Chris," the other person went, "Oh, Chris, wait, I have dark vision." I was like, "Okay, shit, you not." Three other people went, "Oh, I also have dark vision. Oh, and I have dark vision. Oh, and I have dark." I was like, "I don't care if you have dark vision."
It's not relevant to what's currently happening.
None of it doesn't care. I don't care. You can have dark vision. It's never going to work.
It's middle of damn day. It doesn't matter.
Well, it's the rhyme. So it's the rhyme. So it's like it's dark outside always. So they're like, "Oh, this is relevant. I have dark vision." No. Yep. No. I don't care if you have dark vision. But it was funny. And it's just
players.
I know.
Yeah, it's funny you would mention having nine players. So as I do, I occasionally go back and start looking at old modules and things in my collection. And our buddy Dan was talking to us about the game he had played in recently, where his dungeon master had gone back and taken one of the old first edition modules, updated it for 5e, run them through it, and how much fun he had doing that. And I was looking back through one of them I have. It's first edition, called To Find a King. This was written in 85. And it's written for the RPGA, which I've mentioned before, which was the Role Playing Gamers Association. This thing, however, was actually written for tournament play.
Okay.
And, which, you know, I haven't seen a lot of them that are specifically written for tournament play. And the encounters in these adventures were originally designed for a team of 10 characters, levels 4 to 7.
F that.
That's no. That's how your tournaments were run, apparently, was 10 players. They're all pre-generated characters that are in the back of the book. Let's see, the highest level one was 6th, I think, and a couple of them were level 4. I guess you just sort of hand them out randomly. It's kind of interesting, though. The tournament play, there's actually rules for it in here that I've never seen before, because I own this shit, but I haven't read a lot of the stuff I own.
Okay.
The recommended running time is 3.5 hours per adventure, so it's roughly the same as Adventurers League, it sounds like. And as originally run, achieving the goal was the primary victory condition, with area penetration secondary. Casualties, then expenditure of resources, such as items and spells, were used as tiebreakers. And this thing has a scoring chart in the back of it. At the end of the adventure is a usable scoring system. The tournament also has various conventions which follow. And there's 5 different rules for tournament play. Players are presented with pre-created characters. Characteristics, equipment, spell list, and magic items are listed. They may not add to or alter this list. Number 2. Players may only use the player's handbook during play. Use of the other rulebooks is prohibited. All personal magic items that the characters start with are known and completely understood by the owners. Number 3, there are no wandering monsters in tournament play. The random monster tables included here are for campaign play only. Number 4, okay. Monsters will fight to the best of their ability unless the tournament notes specify otherwise. Such monsters will neither check morale nor flee unless noted. Monsters will be full aware fully aware of the capabilities of their weapons, magic items, and spells, and will use these to advantage. And the fifth one, tournament characters do not advance in level between rounds. The pacing of the adventures is such that no time for training is available between the scenarios. This module, it's about 30 pages long, and it's actually broken up into four different scenarios, so each one could be run as part of the tournament. This is the second or third one of these modules in the list. So if you have them all, you can actually run them as a campaign, you know, basically like Icewind Dale or something.
Okay.
But it's just a neat little look into the past. Dungeons & Dragons was originally designed as a war game. And the first edition stuff still has a very war game feel to it. Yeah, with the fifth edition stuff, everything is campaign driven. It's story driven. First edition, there was absolutely story there, but it was built more as a tournament, as a war game, thing like that. It's just kind of neat to occasionally look back on that stuff. I know Dan said he had played through it recently and had a really good time with it, and it kind of makes me want to go back and start doing that, taking some of those old modules and just sort of rewriting them for 5th edition rules and then running them.
Yeah. But there's been like internal power creep with the character classes and whatnot ever since.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, hang on. Let me find the... level 4 to 7 characters. Mind you, there's 10 of them, but you're fighting a black dragon. Now it's an old. It is an old black dragon. Has an AC of 3, which is the equivalent of an armor class of about 17. Its damage is 1d4, 1d4, and 3d6. Its claw attacks do a d4 of damage. this thing has 8 hit dice and 48 hit points.
Well, it's back when you're doing like 1 or 2 damage, right?
Well, it used to at levels 4 to 7. I think you got 1 attack a round for the characters. So
it's an ancient black dragon, right?
It's an old black dragon. Like I think this one's beyond. It's beyond ancient. It's to the point that it's decrepit. Okay. You know, it's just so old and barely alive. It's so old. But either way, its breath weapon still deals 48 damage, so it will fuck you up that way.
Okay.
The characters. Let me pull up a couple of character sheets real quick, just aside.
So comparing it to the Wyrmling, then. Wyrmling had 33 hit points, 17 AC, and it has one bite attack. And it does 9 damage. No, 7 piercing and 2 acid.
Yeah. What's its breath weapon do?
Acid, 15 foot line, DC, 11 dex, 22.
Yeah, okay. Acid, so this thing's definitely more dangerous than a Wyrmling.
But definitely not as dangerous as an ancient.
Oh, no. God, no. As it shouldn't be. I mean, the characters are 4th to 6th level. So there's 2 characters that are fighters and rangers that have, one of them has 47 hit points, the other has 46. But let's see, at 6th level, 47 hit points is the highest of everybody. There's one character with 22 hit points at 4th level. Yeah. So yeah, there's definite power creep in the editions. 3rd edition went up, 5e is just ridiculous with power creep.
Yeah.
Everything just has so much higher numbers than they used to.
Sure. Acid breath at an ancient dragon is 15d8.
Yeah, that's surefire.
DC 22.
Yep. Now, the thing is, like, the weapons damage for characters hasn't really changed since first edition. Not very, very little. Like, a longsword still deals, it always dealt like 1d8. Short sword was 1d6. So that never really changed. I think it's just the amount of attacks that have changed.
Yep. Frightful presence and 3 attacks. 1 with a bite and 2 with its claws. And then also 3 tail attacks during this.
Oh yeah, and, yeah. Don't not to mention all the legendary actions. That's a new thing that was not around in the early days.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Tomb of Horrors was originally created as for a tournament as well.
Oh yeah.
And I know that one's kind of crazy, but that was only 5 players. I can't imagine 10. I don't know how you would do it. I don't know how you could play a game unless that session is super short. Like if you were to run it right now, it'd be like an hour. And just because of the amount of players, that's why it took 4, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know.
It's kind of crazy. I've run 9 regularly and I've run as many as 13 before. And obviously I'll never do that again. I have a very hard rule of 6. That's my max. I don't run more than that anymore. It's doable, but it really, you cannot run a campaign like that. No. You could run one shots like that because they don't matter. It's you screwed something up or you get distracted, whatever. It's a one shot. Trying to run a campaign with more than 6 people is like pulling damn teeth. It's so hard.
Yeah. I'm going to have to figure out the solution to that problem. You know, there's a couple players that want to start learning how to DM. And, you know, if that's the case, I'll just walk over, pull off the starter kit and go, you're going to play Lost Mines of Phandelver. Good luck.
I mean, that's how you do it, though. You have to, because you're running Adventures League, you just need more DMs who are willing to do it there. Dungeon Masters are few and far between. Dungeon Masters who are willing to run Adventure League every Wednesday or even harder to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am very lucky with the play group I've got. We have 2 very consistent Dungeon Masters. We have 2 other people in the group who have Dungeon Mastered and can Dungeon Master. Every once in a while, they run one shots and stuff for us. So that's 4 people out of my play group that are capable of being a dungeon master.
Yeah, I think out of my home personal play group, everyone but my wife has DM'd of some sort, mm-hmm. You know, so.
Keep trying to get Jacob to do it, but he doesn't want anything to do with that.
I was wondering if that's the guy that doesn't want to DM.
Yep. Oh, Yeah. Yep, it's definitely him. He'd rather kill zombies with us, but not run dungeons. That's right. I'm calling you out.
So there's one last thing I want to talk about on the podcast. And we talked about this in length on the Twitch stream on Friday when I was prepping. Grumpy Dungeon Master Panda was on, and he went out of his way to derail me from making the map that I needed to make. And essentially, we were talking about just random things. And then one of my players who was watching the stream brought up Tidal Wave and what our ruling on Tidal Wave was. Okay.
Okay.
So,
and I've read the spell, but I still don't know where this is going. So have at it.
Tidal Wave is a 3rd level spell. Instantaneous, casting time of 1 action, of a range of 120 feet. The spell reads as follows. You conjure up a wave of water that crashes down on an area within range. The area can be up to 30 feet long, up to 10 feet wide, and 10 feet tall. Each creature in that area must make a dexterity saving throw. On a failed save, a creature takes 48 bludgeoning damage and is not prone. On a successful save, the creature takes half as much damage and isn't knocked prone. The water then spreads out around the ground in all directions, extinguishing unprotected flames in an area within 30 feet of it, and then it vanishes. So, because the title of the spell is called Tidal Wave, okay?
Yep.
You're probably thinking that, okay, I'm going to choose a point. Let's just say it's 5 spaces away from me. And bam, wave of water just comes out of existence, okay? And comes up from the ground or whatever and crashes down on somebody.
Yep.
That's not really how it reads if you really get down to it, okay? And I will admit this is kind of almost creative use of game mechanics, all right? You conjure a wave of water that crashes down on an area within range, okay? So technically, it sounds like you're conjuring water wherever you want. It could be 120 feet up in the air. It could be on the ground or whatever.
Yeah.
You're just conjuring water, okay? All right. And the area of that water that you create is 30 by 10 by 10, right?
Yep.
Okay, and then it comes crashing down, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just say, hypothetically, there was a dragon in the sky. Okay? And he is 30 feet above me. And I conjure a tidal wave above his head. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the water crashes down onto the dragon. He fails his save. He's knocked prone. Okay? The dragon falls 30 feet. The water falls 30 feet as well. Hits the ground. He takes the 48 from the water hitting him. And then he takes the 30d8. Or sorry, the whatever the... So it's the, 30 feet the, up, so...
The 3d6?
No.
Fall damage is a d6 per 10 feet.
Okay, so 3d6. Okay, so it's 3d6 for the falling damage. And he hits the ground when he's prone. Okay? Didn't really hurt the dragon that much, but he's on the ground now and prone.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens when the next mage decides...
All right, hold. Before you continue on... The one place you messed up was you said you summoned the water above the dragon.
Yes.
You wouldn't, summoning it above him will do nothing. Summoning
Why
it
not?
Because the way this reads very specifically, the area can be 30 feet long, 10 feet wide, up to 10 feet tall. Each creature in that area. So you're effectively summoning not a cube, but like a rectangle of water.
Okay, a rectangle of water. So you summon it in him. Okay.
Every creature in that area must make that deck. So everything in that rectangle of water has to make that save. Not under it, not above it, in it.
Okay. So he was in it, then failed to save, knock prone, hit the ground.
Right,
the
water. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So now the next mage is up. He thought that was super effective. Okay. I'm going to do the same thing. So, what this guy does instead is 120 feet above the dragon, he summons the tidal wave of water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that rectangle of water gets created in the air, 30 feet long, 10 feet high, 10 feet high, 10 feet wide.
Yep.
And then it comes crashing down towards the ground.
Yeah. And there's no effect of that. Other than
Why
it's
not?
Because that's the way the spell reads. Everything that is
so you're saying that this water, which is now just this mass of 30 by 10 by 10 water,
there is an effect. The water will fall,
yeah.
And the water then spreads out across the ground in all directions, extinguishing unprotected flames in its area and within 30 feet of it, and then it vanishes. That is the only effect of that. The only effects you get out of the spell are what happens to the things that are inside that rectangle of water. And then when the water dissipates.
So you're telling me that this giant cube of water, rectangle of water, okay.
You made it fucking rain. Good job. That's what you did.
This cube of water is now falling down in just one massive block.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's going to smash into the dragon, into bystanders, into a house.
It's going to rain.
You're gonna say it's gonna rain and not hit as a giant cube of water all at once.
That is correct, and you want it because the spell does not say otherwise. You want to know the best part is it doesn't even get things wet, because the water at the very last part of the last sentence is and then it vanishes.
I'm not talking about things getting wet.
I know. I'm just saying it's there and then it's gone.
So let me tell you how Panda rules this. Okay. He says that you summon the water, okay? And the effect goes off. And then, because it specifically says the water comes crashing down, okay? Very first sentence, the water comes crashing down, okay? Onto the ground.
Yeah, I follow.
You're talking about a falling object that weighs into the tonnages of size, okay? So it does the full 20d6 damage as it falls.
Yeah, see, I don't agree with that. I don't know if you've ever been to Six Flags or not, but there's a ride there called Splash Mountain, where uh-huh. you Nobody cares about the ride. Everybody likes to stand on the bridge above it, because as soon as that, maybe it's a log ride, I don't remember what this, it's basically a coaster that goes down a water slide, and when it hits the bottom, there's a pool of water. So it just throws this huge wave of water into people. You know, and that's it. You get hit with a wave of water, and it's over. Yeah, well, a wave of water dissipates very quickly.
Yeah, but the wave of water is not falling 120 feet.
If you were to take a dump truck and just, you know, have it hanging 120 feet and flip it over, it's going to drop some water, and it's not going to hurt anything because it spreads as it falls. Mm-hmm. If it was a frozen cube, it would do a lot of damage, but it's not. Water dissipates very easily. Dissipate's not the right word, but that's the one that came into my head. Like, it just,
you don't think this magic's going to keep it in the 30 by 10 by 10 shape?
No, I think it's summoned in the 30 by 10 by 10, and then it does what water does. It spreads.
Yeah, but it's falling through the sky.
Yeah, okay.
It has no way to spread yet until it hits the ground.
Yeah, and then things get wet underneath it, and that's it. And then they become not wet because it says it vanishes.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to wash your clothes, it's probably the best way to wash your clothes.
Yeah,
you just take 48 bludgeoning damage when you do.
Yeah, well, that's if you're in the initial summoning. If you conjured it 120 feet above your head and then dropped it, you're just gonna get a nice good rinsing.
I'm kind of torn about it because, like, on one hand, I don't mind the creative use of game mechanics saying that, hey, I just summoned this giant water droplet in the sky, okay, and I'm just dropping it on somebody's head. And you're saying that it's going to instantly disperse and spread everywhere, which would not happen. If you drop a giant
thing
of water in the sky, it's going to hit and hit hard.
Rules as written, it's going to do nothing. I'm going on rules as written, especially when it comes to spells. You kind of have to. Yeah, I understand getting creative, but I've played through a lot of the earlier editions, and there are a lot of spells that aren't specified how things work, and people will get creative with those, and they will find ways to absolutely break them. If I'm able to do this the way you're talking about, yeah, it's a dragon killing machine. You know, I hit them with this tidal wave 120 feet up in the air. I silvery barbs their saving throw.
Good callback.
Yeah, I silvery barbs the saving throw so that they, you know, almost certainly are knocked prone. They then fall 120 feet. Yeah, and then they would take the, you know, another 48 of water falling damage on top of the initial 48. Not like that. That's not how this is going to work.
The way I look at it and the way I read it too is like, if you create that water, like you said, you summon it in the dragon. The dragon's up there with the water. Okay, that block gets hit by the tidal wave. He takes some bludgeoning damage from the water. And then the water has to go someplace. Okay.
Yeah.
The water is going to come crashing down. It's not going to sprinkle down.
So here's an example of what I'm talking about, of allowing players to get too creative with shit like this. Directly below the tidal wave that you sent me the link to in the comments, for those of you who run into how much damage does tidal wave do to a fire elemental problem, here are some numbers for you. And they literally break down the numbers of gallons of water per cubic feet, how much damage it would do. And this spell doesn't say anything about that. Yeah, they're talking about a fire elemental the size of an average human hit by a tidal wave spell. It would take 750 points of cold damage.
No.
But that tidal wave says nothing about that. But that's a player who's getting creative with it. And players will do that if you allow them to.
Fire elemental.
Fire elementals probably, I don't even know, but they probably take double.
So fire elemental has it built into its stat block. It says every 5 feet the elemental moves in water, or for every gallon of water splashed on it, it takes one cold damage.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were very specific in having to include that with a human size humanoid fire elemental. So Panda, we're talking about tidal wave, and Jay is calling you out, saying you are absolutely totally wrong, 100%. And how dare you say that it would fall on hurt anybody?
Here we go. All right. Hi, Panda. Welcome to the podcast. Good to have you back on here, buddy.
Thank you, buddy. So what's the problem with Tidal Wave?
Okay. So send him the link. That way he has it pulled up so we can properly go over it again.
He probably has it from when we discussed it like last night.
No, most likely. All right. So rules as written. The way the spell is written.
Yeah.
All right. Now, yeah, not getting creative, not going out of bounds of how it is written. The spell, anything within that rectangle of water as it is summoned up, that's the only stuff that's going to take damage. Because that's how,
from the effect of the spell.
That is correct. And then when the water falls, things will get wet, and then they will not be wet because the spell vanishes. Anything within that initial damage, that initial rectangle, you know, they have to make the save or fall prone. That's it.
Are you saying that this magical water is weightless?
No, I am saying it as rules as written, as per the spell.
As rules as written, all the information that they have given us for the effect of the spell is accurate. What you hit with it is it takes damage from the spell effect of that amount, and that's what you hit, and that's what gets knocked prone. However, the water will still fall. The water still has weight. The water will hit the ground before it ever dissipates. Therefore, object having weight hitting ground will do damage.
Except it's water. Water disperses around things very easily.
If you drop something, if you drop a swimming pool full worth of water on top of a human being, you will fuck them up. You're not going to make them wet. You're going to fuck up their day. It is, when you talk about a 5-foot cubic square of weight, I believe that we did a little bit of math on this the other day, and 5 cubic feet worth of water was something like 300 pounds. So you have 300 pounds of weight in a 5-foot square that is going to hit down onto that spot. Weight doesn't change just because of the density of the water. Or just because of that, I mean, it's going to hit. It's not going to smush them into a pancake, but it's going to hurt.
Maybe. But
there is rules for falling objects that weigh 300 pounds or more, being that it takes max damage after 10 feet.
Yeah. Once again, rules is written. As per the spell, that's all it does, period. End of story.
That is what the spell does, yes.
So,
and then if you continue on with rules as written, it then becomes a falling object that does damage.
I disagree on that.
I mean, the water exists. The water has weight. The water will fall.
You weren't here for the initial or the other part of this. Uh-huh. It's allowing players to get too creative with a spell.
I agree. I would never fucking allow this.
Yeah, okay then. So it's a moot point.
I'm just saying that rules is written, that's what it should do. But I will, as I said, and I even said this the other day, this is always overridden by the overwhelming power of the main rule, which is the GM can just say no.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, then you don't even have to go into the bandit hideout. Just drop a fucking tidal wave on the central house, and everybody in there died because the whole house came crashing in.
No, we were comparing this to Tsunami, the 8th level spell.
Now, Tsunami's a whole other story.
And the thing actually,
it's less effective.
It's less effective because how it reads much more to like the argument you were saying with like the water not having an effect or anything like that. Like
because you have gravity never affects Tsunami.
Yeah, because you have to summon it on the ground.
It only moves as an effect of the spell.
Yeah.
At no point does it say anything about it falling and dissipating once it hits the ground.
Yeah, so like you summon a Tsunami in the sky, it just moves forward 50 feet until it equals out, and then it just disappears. It never actually falls.
Except for the fact that it hits like a fucking Mack truck. I
mean, it does the effect of the spell.
Yeah.
And but at no point does gravity ever come into effect with Tsunami.
Yeah, you're not getting
creative. At no point is it ever a falling object. It's just a
Tidal Wave is a falling object. And that's the big difference. Tidal Wave is a falling object. Tsunami is not.
I'm trying to find the actual wording of Tsunami. There it is. Yeah, it's the size of that thing, though. I mean,
oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, 300 feet long, 300 feet high, and 50 feet thick. We've talked about it on the podcast. That's literally how you drown the entire Underdark, is with tsunami spells.
Yeah, but it doesn't actually fall. It just moves forward 50 feet away from you and then dissipates. It doesn't actually fall at all per the spell.
Yep.
Whereas Tidal Wave specifically says that it falls and crashes on the ground and just screws up Cindy Lou Who. Which, if you're following on Facebook, that's the reference to this.
Of course.
Talking about.
The problem with this is that spell ends in the duration. The wall lasts for the duration. The end of blah, blah, blah. At the end of the turn, wall's height is reduced. So it slowly sort of fades away.
Yeah, it away ends. It's
the problem is you can't even drown anybody with this spell. You can do a fuck ton of damage to them, but you could actually drown them with it.
With tsunami or tidal wave?
Tsunami.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, tsunami, well, it's a whole
different. Despite the size, it's going to keep shrinking, and it doesn't last long enough to get anybody with, because it takes a minute to drown.
Yeah.
And it only lasts for six rounds.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but the difference is this will deal damage for multiple rounds.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, it's 6d10 the first round, then 5d10, then 4d10. Like, it'll continue to go for a little while. And they have to make a strength saving throw every round or continue to get pushed by it. If you want to get not rules as written and start, talking about other things you could do with it, what happens if you run them off a cliff or into a wall, At that point, they're getting with tsunami.
There's rules for falling off a cliff afterwards, though. You just become a falling object.
Yep. So it moves 50 feet away from you. So, 50 feet, then 50 feet, and then it runs them into the edge of a wall where they take damage
off a cliff.
Yeah. You could definitely fuck up Whoville with tsunami.
Unless they swim out of it.
Yeah, if they make the strength save, they're good at that point.
I guess the downside of this one is that if they pass the save, they don't even take half damage.
Yeah. On a failed save, creature takes 6d10 or half as much on a successful save.
Does it say that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the second paragraph, the last sentence.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
So real quick, going back to this whole, what does Tidal Wave do to a fire elemental problem? If you summon a Tidal Wave on a fire elemental, which is a
large... It will only do that 6d10 and half on a failed save on its very... when the wall appears. On any subsequent turn, it is a save or nothing.
Oh, okay.
Because once you get to the second paragraph, that's where it then talks about the damage that happens after that. And that one specifically says, when it enters the move, succeed on a strength saving throw, take 5d10 damage. Doesn't say anything about half on a fail. It's only if you...
I follow.
Yeah.
Either way, I still like Tsunami better, although it's way higher level, so you're not going to be able to cast it nearly as much.
Very true.
So real quick, about Tidal Wave on the Fire Elemental. Fire Elemental's large. Tidal Wave hits a large area multiple times. Okay? So let's just say they're on the ground. You summon Tidal Wave on the ground, so none of this falling crap that we were just talking about. And the Fire Elemental basically takes up a 10x10x10 area of the Tidal Wave. And the wave hits them. They take the bludgeoning damage. Let's say they're knocked prone and all that good stuff. So there's eight blocks total of water that hits and surrounds this fire elemental when Tidal Wave goes off. How do you guys rule that for the fire elemental with water's susceptibility, where for every 5 feet the elemental moves in water, for every gallon of water splashed on it, it takes 1 cold damage?
Yeah, I'm reading that right now. That's a stupid thing for them to even have. For every gallon of water splashed on it. Like, that's really just going to require somebody to do a lot of fucking math.
It's 37 points of damage per 5-foot cube. Since they 2 by 2 by 2, that would be 37 times 8.
Yeah.
So 37 times 8 is 296 points of damage.
Cool. Yeah, so that fire elemental is dead three times over.
Which is still way off from the number this other guy gave of 750 points.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he got that, because the tidal wave, I think he maybe assumed that, like, the entire tidal wave hit the person.
No, yeah, I'd only count it for, like, for every 5 feet the elemental moves in water, so in the initial damage that it takes, if it doesn't move at all, then it takes that much of damage. Then moving through it, I guess it can take way more.
Well, for every gallon of water splashed on it, there's 37 gallons for every cube space that it takes up, because it's all getting splashed on it with tidal wave.
You're killing me here. You're doing way too much fucking math for this. Uh-huh. That's what I say. Water susceptibility, which apparently is a fire elemental stat that I had never seen before. It's terrible. I would never use this. I would never try to use that.
Uh huh.
Listen. Smokey the Bear needs.
I'm trying to figure out why fire elementals can't fly. That makes me sad. Why don't fire elementals have a flight?
I don't know.
Can they hover?
No.
Nope. They just have a walk speed. Looks like.
They have a walk speed. I don't like that.
I mean, they move 50 feet, so it's a fast walk speed.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, I don't know what else to say about that. I would never use water susceptibility. I'd have to figure out some other method of figuring out how much damage they took.
So all I've learned from here is that you're not a fun DM to let me do crazy stuff with my spells.
Well, I'll let you do crazy stuff with your spells if it falls within rules as written.
Yeah, it's rules as written. Waterfalls. Falling damage is a thing. We're going to be here taking out some of defeating the galleon of oncoming pirates by ourselves, while you can just go take Yoda
and Ace Magic
Ritz and play Yahtzee or whatever the hell you wanted to do.
I get motherfucking space magic.
What?
And here, real quick. So we talked about this earlier in the podcast. I'm sending you the image right now on our Grumpy Dungeon Master Discord. Please join the Grumpy Dungeon Master Discord if you haven't already. Who are you going to buy for your D&D party with $100?
Yeah, this podcast got a little extra long, and it's awesome. Thanks,
Dan. We're just at an hour.
All right. For my D&D party, I'm going to take Doctor Strange.
Smart call.
Good choice.
Because teleportation's always a good thing.
I mean, the Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah. Some sort of fighty guy that can get me past some doors. Kind of tempted to take Blade. He's got good regeneration abilities. Takes a lot to keep him down.
Mm.
Conan would cause too many problems.
Yeah. Yeah, he would.
He's too much of a pain in the ass. I don't want him. Shitty TV Merlin is way too whiny. Again,
that's one to the left of Blade. I knew recognized him.
Legolas can suck a dick. That's okay. I don't want Geralt in this. Dritz can go suck. I don't want him in this party either. Harry Potter wizards are useless. Gandalf knows like 2 spells. So I'm sitting at $70. I got $30 to spend. I need somebody that can make those history checks. That's sort of like Arcana stuff. So I'm going to grab Indy.
No time for love, Dr. Jones.
I'm going to grab Indy. So that puts me up to $80. So I only got $20 left. I don't even know who that last $20 guy is.
None of us do.
We think it's a guy from Supernatural.
Okay.
Did you?
You know what? I don't have in the party right now. I don't have a charisma user.
Hold on. I think that's the guy there. That's that $20 that charisma heartthrob. But I don't know. I think Captain Jack has better charisma than.
No, I think I take Captain Jack.
Oh yeah. You still got another 10 bucks, right?
And that still leaves me with 10 bucks. So I think I'm taking a Wookiee.
You're taking a Wookiee.
Yeah, Wookiee's a good choice. Yeah. Liu Kang would have been an acceptable choice, too. I mean, he throws fires and turns into dragons, which is pretty baller.
Is that Liu Kang?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or is it? No, that's Jackie Chan.
I think that's just Jackie Chan, buddy.
No, that's Jackie Chan as Ryu.
That's Jackie Chan. No, that is not Jackie Chan as Ryu because Jackie Chan never played Ryu.
I was going to say, no, he did. I was going to say, what are you talking about?
No, he did. He did. Hold on.
No, he played Chun-Li.
Chun-Li's the girl.
Yes. Jackie Chan dressed up as Chun-Li in the movie City Hunter.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what
Hold on.
I don't remember him going. I own that movie, actually, somewhere.
Okay. He definitely has dressed up as Chun-Li, and that's just. Okay, no, sure. No.
I have it right now. I'll send you guys a video. He is Ryu in like some weird Street Fighter thing they did in China. And yeah, that's gonna be
from City Hunter also. The thing was, it was a weird fucking movie. I don't remember the Ryu part, but it would have been the same fight scene. He starts off and him and this guy are fighting, and Jackie gets punched into a Street Fighter II video game machine, arcade machine, and then things go weird, and he pops up as Chun-Li and the other. Yeah. The other guy, I think, was Guile or some shit like that, and they get into a fight, and then I guess they swapped at some point to Ryu and whoever else.
I don't know. If it was like Tai Chi Master Jackie Chan, I might want him, but nah.
Yeah, I could have sworn that. I thought it was Liu Kang. It still looks like Liu Kang to me. But
all right, so there you go. Doctor Strange Blade with a Captain Jack, an Indy, and a Chewbacca.
All right. Well, that's good. That rounds it out. We're done. Thank you, Panda, for jumping in and helping us with the conversation.
Yeah, my purchases were Yoda, Blade, and Jurist because I get space magic and two unbeatable killing machines.
Oh, I just fucking don't want to see Jurist's face.
Yeah, well, he's been written as a superpower in all of the books.
Now, admittedly, are you using original 5e Yoda rules or using the new racial Yoda rules?
I am using...
Because in the original, you know you'd only have like a 25 movement speed.
Well, that... 25.
If that, honestly, you should have like 10 foot movement speed.
No, he's got to have a 50 foot movement speed because he's going to ride on Driss back.
I'm in.
I don't think Driss wants to carry his ass around.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, everybody.
I'm southbound and down. All my rolls are crits. It's time for me to hit the bricks.